You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to the Record Celtic podcast. My name is Daniel Conn. I'm delighted to be joined by Record Sports' Michael Gannon and Graham Young. Guys, how are you?
Afternoon, guys. Managed to keep my head on my shoulders after being at Parkhead last night. I know that Robbie Nielsen was talking about decapitation and all that stuff, but my head doesn't roll down the pavement just yet.
Graham, you doing well?
Yeah, doing well. I thought Mick was going to make a joke. I thought that was some weather joke about something about frozen still, but
grass monkeys.
So all good here, Daniel.
Well, I mean, that's you probably kick us off in the right area, Mick. Celtic 3-1 winners over Hearts, but Robbie Nielsen kind of stole the show after the game with his comments. I mean, what did you make of him?
Quite surprising. I mean, I don't think we quite expected that kind of outburst or rant, but it was getting his point across. Listen, it's a bit of kiddology from Robbie. I mean, is it a red card offence? I don't think so. I don't think many folk would think it's a red card offence, really, when he sees it back. Obviously, there was a VAR check at the time. And it's one of those VAR checks when announced there's a VAR check and everyone thinks, what was it for? And you see it again, you think, all right, he's late. Probably a yellow card. Yep, definitely. Was it the IFAB call? Is it brutality or excessive force? I don't think so. Slightly clumsy, maybe, but I don't think it was a red card. So I think Robbie, listen, he's quite good. Robbie doing that kind of thing. He deflects a bit of attention from his team a wee bit. I thought Hearts played really well on the night. I think they gave Celtic as big a challenge as anyone's given them in recent weeks. I still think Celtic were more than worthy of their win. But I think Robbie, maybe a wee bit of kidology, maybe cranks up a wee bit of pressure on officials for the game again on Saturday. I think he's having a bit of fun with it, Robbie. I don't think it's that bad a challenge, really, to merit a big inquest.
I didn't think it was a red card either, but maybe an orange card, Graham. Do you know what I mean? Just a wee bit worse than a yellow, but not quite a red.
I think a strong yellow, and I kind of touched upon it there, that the kidology element. I think the fact that in Nielsen's second interview, so when he spoke to the guys last night, he spoke to Sky after it, and he kind of intimated that the biggest issue was it was a yellow card, but why is Alan Muir not spotting that rather than it going to VAR and so forth? So I think even deep down, Robbie Nielsen knew it was a yellow card. And I think one of those ones, isn't it? Like, if you look at the still, if you look at the grab of it, it looks bad, really bad, but in real time, he's on the ground and he's almost like kind of flicked a leg at it. It's a sore one, definitely. But I think that ties in right. Of course, any advantage or any kind of pre-match, well, you say buster, isn't it? Like, so it's because it's such a quick turnaround Wednesday night to Saturday morning. It'll still be in the news agenda until I think Ange speaks as well, and then you're into the game. So I think it's straight out the old playbook of Kidology getting a little bit of mind games before another one. And but I think as well, the one that Mick was saying there as well, I thought Hearts were pretty good last night, really solid. And I'm not saying that one each at half time, you could call it, you'd still have favoured Celtic, but there was a lot to like. I thought the passing was pretty good for Hearts, and I think that's a big thing. Like the games in Europe, when they kind of came up short, their passing kind of deserts them. So if they play with that intent, obviously Celtic will be in a game again on Saturday. But I think Bernabei probably not going to start the game with Taylor, likely to come back. But I don't think he'd be missing any games with suspension. I think it's the perfect kind of call for a yellow card in that situation.
Mick, just on Bernabei that Graham raises, would you make him as a player? Like, you obviously watched him in the flesh last night. I can't really. There's lots of good things about him, but just seems like a bit raw at times.
Yeah, I mean, he's still only young. I think he's only still only 21. So he's a young player, but as I can move a prospect or anything else. He hadn't played for a month and a half, 2 months until he came in last night, so he was clearly rusty. But I thought him and Tony Ralston, who both hadn't played much in the last couple of months, I thought they were both a wee bit rusty, and you could tell. And the way Celtic play, there's so much traffic comes through the fullbacks, these inverted fullbacks, it's shown up more because they're a wee bit not quite up to speed. So they weren't quite at it. I thought the two of them got better as the game went on. I think Burnaby has showed some promise at times. I think you're right, he's been a wee bit raw at times as well. But he is young. He's not been helped the fact that Greg Taylor has been so good this season. I mean, Taylor's been one of the players of the year for Celtic. I mean, he's one of the first names in the team sheets each week. And I think he just got a wee knock at the weekend. I thought there was no point in risking him. He's such a key player for Celtic now. So he's maybe a bit unfortunate, the fact that Taylor's played so well. But he's still a work in progress. I think he's got some attributes. He's good going forward. A wee bit rash at times. Decision making could get tightened up, but it might come. He's only 21, so it might come.
And Graham, obviously, we had the story in Record Sport today about how Dyson Maeda might be struggling with an injury. He's obviously been a key player for Celtics, particularly since the World Cup. But if he is to miss a couple of games, I thought Haksabanovic really stood out when he came on last night. Obviously, a brilliant goal. And do you think maybe it's time he got a wee run in the team?
Potentially. I think he had that cracking little spell just before the World Cup. He is a really talented player. I think that makes sense. But I thought Maeda, just a quick word for him, those 29 minutes he was on the pitch. So obviously he's got the full routine where the work ethic non-stop. But last night he was like prime Ryan Giggs for Man United in the 90s. Like, just slaloming past players. Really, really dangerous. Like, that's what it reminded me. Like you know those European nights, Man United battles. Some people won because they probably weren't born, but by the day, I was just on it last night, and he's got that great mix, Maeda, where it's like the games he's very much, it's his work ethic and desire and pushing the pace that really make the difference. And I think Cup Final would be a good example of that, where he's touched probably at times deserted him. Then last night, he can be really on it. If he fancies it against a fullback, he can come inside, outside. The one he fizzed past, that he got ruled out offside for, and I know his argument, I think Hugo might have been slightly off, but I know he was flagged for offside, but I think I really like the fact that he had the pop, because sometimes it's he kind of second-guesses himself with shots, and then perfect position for the goal, which ultimately led an injury. And Haksabanovic is a different type, as we know, but his close control is something really, really special. And I think this Celtic squad's made up of guys with multiple traits, but in the final third, is whatever Jota brings, Maeda, Kyogo, Haksabanovic is of that ilk, and he's really kind of classy players. That if you watched him for another team, you'd be like, he's really kind of top class. And I think he's been kind of, he's not always been the first sub on the pitch. It's always that 20 minutes here, 15 minutes there. But I think he's right in contention for the weekend. Funnily enough, Abada, who was so strong against St Mirren, probably didn't have his best game. So it's very up in the air probably for how he, if Maeda doesn't make it, how he go. Jota's probably better on the left, but would you bring Haksabanovic on that side? So there's a few questions looming, but I think Celtic fans have got a soft spot for Haksabanovic and the type of goals he scores. When he puts it in the net, they're normally a bit special, like a kind of first touch finish or that one last night in the top bin. So not sure about the, what would we give the salsa dancing? Would it be a 7 from Len or whatever, but he's a really talented player, and you can see why fans adore him and enjoy watching him.
I know we've talked about it a lot, particularly in the pod, but I need to bring up Kyogo again. I know all of the adjectives have been trotted out in regards to how well he's played this season, but last night, Mick, he reached the 25 goal milestone, which is obviously for any striker is a really brilliant return. Do you think he's up there though with the likes of Odson Edward, Moussa Dembele,
Lee Griffiths?
Oh, well, good point.
Another one. I think he is. I mean, but he got 20 last season, not far off as well, despite injuries and all that stuff. He missed a bit this year as well. He's been a fantastic signing, hasn't he? Right. It was funny last night listening to Ange Postecoglou kind of having a go at his team for not really spotting his runs. I think he thinks the service could be better to him. You think, well, how many goals are you going to get if he gets better service? He's great. I mean, he's run his last night, his goal last night was exceptional. It was a really good move, actually. I mean, Jota wins the ball back really well, pings a ball infield to Moy. And Moy, I mean, did spot the run. And it was, the run he made was one of those in-to-out runs. It was great. The defenders did not know where he was at any point in time. Came across his man and he finished it really well. And that sums him up. His movement's terrific. Burst of pace. He's got so many goals that are so similar, that attack in the near post. But he goes in these kind of amazing runs and attacks in the near post. He's been absolutely terrific. Obviously, the cup final hero of twice now. Obviously, last year's cup final, league cup final, and this year's one. He was a hero. He's been a tremendous signing. He's an infectious character as well in terms of his personality. Fans love him. His teammates seem to love him. He's pretty selfless. He seems to be quite a polite wee guy as well. I mean, he'll apologise when he kicks somebody and all that stuff. But no, I think he's really is. I mean, he's earned his kind of hero status, hasn't he? I mean, Celtic strikers are always going to be scoring goals purely because of the domination in most of the games and the chances they get. But there's been plenty that haven't done that on that scale and struggled a wee bit. But you look at it now, I think you've got to put Kyogo up there in the same bracket as a kind of Dembele's and Edwards and all that stuff. I mean, I know they went for big money, and you wonder if Kyogo could be the next one. Difficult to kind of say because he does so well in this team, but not many teams play that similar kind of way. So how would they really fit into a different kind of setup? Who knows? I still can't believe we didn't go to the World Cup.
I mean, that's crazy.
I know Japan did really well, but a really good team, but it just kind of blows my brains really how he didn't get picked. And to Tati for that as well. Just shows you how good they are just now. But no, he's been terrific. He's loved, but the fans seem to love him as well. I think talking about 25 goals, I was expecting to kick on and go over 30.
Well, I mean, just on that, just looking at the other strikers, Odson Edward in 1920 got 29 goals. Moussa Dembele back in 16-17 got 32. And you mentioned Griffiths there. I mean,
I think
2015-16 he got bang on 40 goals,
yeah,
53 games. I forgot it was that much.
Yeah, that was peak Griff back then. I know he had good spells after that as well. But when he was on it that season, he was terrific. A different kind of striker as well to Kyogo.
Aye. I know it's not all about goals, but Graham, would you put him up there with the best strikers Celtic have had, arguably, since Martin O'Neill's era? You know, Chris Sutton and Larsen Hartson?
Potentially. I think Gary Hooper was Madrid as well in that run a couple of years. But if you're going in the modern kind of Brendan Rodgers and to present, then I think there's a case for all of them. Dembele was so physically imposing, played so well in the biggest game, so there's a really strong argument. Edward, for that kind of 18 months after he signed permanent, he was just unbelievable. And even I think the final season at Celtic's been reflected by his time at Crystal Palace. Something's changed there. I don't know, post-COVID or whatever, he's just not the same player he was. There was something magical about the way he could take the ball on the left wing and cut in. I think a lot of that's gone for whatever reason. But Kyogo's so consistent and it's just a massive asset. That Dundee game when he burst onto the scene, you need to remember where Celtic were. A whole bunch of new players, Ange Postecoglou trying to prove himself. And then this striker who's incredible, jumping up with chances. I know that just shows you how quickly life changed. Ryan Christie was the man that day with three assists or whatever. So it shows you how a team changes. But from then on, he's just shown his worth. And I think, like all good players, they almost get underrated, as we know. And a little bit of, I think, shiny new toy syndrome. We're looking for play this player and play so forth. But he's just excellent in that constant movement and the kind of stress he puts on the defenders constantly. It's just it's hard to replicate. And he's a top player. I thought his assist last night as well. That's the thing as well. Like, so often he doesn't drift out as much as he probably even did in his first season. But as soon as he makes that kind of bend and run, he's round the corner, perfect pass to Maeda. I just think it shows his quality. He's top class, and I think that he's the most interesting player Celtic have got. And we know with Giacomakis, Juranovic going Celtic, that is the model. Players will come, players will go. But at 28, it's maybe interesting with Kyogo. I'm not one for thinking too romantically about football in the sense that, oh, he'll be there forever. But he's maybe just the one who quite enjoys playing for Celtic and could be there longer than you might imagine. But he's just that level of quality in the final third, and often it's that subtle movement, moving from one centre half to the other. It's top class, and that's a world-class trait that he has, and he's got a lot else about his game, but he's got a real ability to do something that defenders don't like, that suits the Celtic team perfectly. They're not built around one player, but his greatest talent is what makes a Celtic team tick.
And we should say as well, Mick, that it wasn't the only milestone that was met last night, because it was the 100th competitive game for Ange Postecoglou as Celtic boss. And obviously the Celtic fans unveiled a banner, "Gone by Christmas, here's to 100 more." When you do think back to the kind of the first days where he took over and the squad was a bit of a shambles, it's a pretty impressive record that he's got.
Oh, it's beyond impressive. I must admit, a wee chuckle at this "gone by Christmas" thing, right? Because who actually said that he was going to be gone by Christmas?
No wheeling in football insider.
Well, I mean, exactly. I mean, it's almost like a lot of fans go, "Oh, the mainstream media said he'd be gone by Christmas." Who said this? I don't remember seeing this. It was actually a section of Celtic fans who thought it'd be gone by Christmas. It wasn't, certainly wasn't the mainstream media, because a lot of it, us guys in the much maligned press corps could see what he's trying to do, but obviously it was a struggle early on, the first kind of couple of months. But he was happy to be with the whole squad. I mean, he's signed, I mean, dozens of players. His hit rate is exceptional. Mm-hmm. I think he's won 74 games out of 100.
74 wins, 10 draws, 16 losses, 253 goals.
So, I mean, that's up there. Those stats are up there with Martin Neal. I think Martin Neal would slightly edge it, I think. But certainly Brendan Rodgers up there as well. I think Brendan Rodgers might be, in his first 100 games, might be slightly less, purely because I think the Champions League and all that stuff might have changed that slightly. I don't know. But he's up there with those kind of numbers. I mean, that is a Neal and Rodgers numbers, which is exceptional. There is some mitigating factors, I think. You look at the league, the strength of the league in the last couple of years, I don't know if it's as strong as it has been. I think Martin Neal's era, you look back to that time, I think the league was maybe slightly stronger. But then again, you look at that era, Martin Neal's team is probably one of the top six teams in Britain at the time. Mm-hmm. In terms of budget as well, it's probably one of the top 10 teams in Britain, unlike now, where you're certainly lucky to be one of the top 10 teams in the Championship. So it's all relative. But you can't help but be impressed by his first 100 games in charge. I mean, it's been absolutely exceptional. And the good thing for Celtic fans is that it doesn't look like the finished project. I mean, this last kind of 8, 10, 12 weeks, it has looked pretty polished, but you still think there's room for development there as well. And there's maybe another gear to find at times, mm-hmm. Which is quite exciting for punters. But in all, you can't fault them. I mean, the only thing you would say is next year he's got to have a decent crack at Europe.
No,
that, but there's still too many live issues on just now to even think about Europe. I mean, there's a league to be won, and also the Scottish Cup. But so far, it's been pretty much faultless.
Look, I know that this is an impossible question to answer, but I'm going to give it to you, Graham, anyway, because I know that's how highly I think of you. You can answer this, Graham. Yeah. Is he already a modern Celtic legend?
Yeah, like, see, the stuff. Yes, of course he is, because for the last 2 years, he's been all that Celtic fans want. Like, all, fundamentally, to me, this is my view in football. That Erik ten Hag Ajax team that reached the semi-finals somehow lost to Tottenham. Now, they are obviously in a bigger budget than Celtic and other probably teams like Porto, etc. As well. Porto have a different budget for Celtic. There's relative, as Mick pointed out, in budgets. But that fundamental desire for a team to really have a go at others is all football fans want. Now, look at Tottenham right now with Conte, right? We know his track record winning trophies, right? But fundamentally, the football's garbage or hard to watch. These trophies only take you so far. So with Postecoglou being able to do both, entertain fans, plus bring trophies, is exceptional. He does it in a style, and it's so interesting about Europe. It's so true, right? But all it takes, you just think right now, you know they're almost certainly going to be Champions League, right? And you just know if it's a stinker of a group, it's a real challenge again. They almost need a kind of Champions Europa group, don't they? Like, mm-hmm. Celtic against teams like Porto, Feyenoord, PSV Eindhoven, whoever, you go through that level, Roma, Lazio, those type of teams, that's Celtic, you would love to see, because the practice, what they tried to put into practice against Real Madrid, that high press, and all, eventually you've got to get picked off in those games. And listen, you can't choose your groups or who you play, but you would hope just doesn't enough. It worked for Brendan Rodgers, the Anderlecht season, as we know, the second season in the Champions League group stage, and able to win in Belgium, and that was enough to get into the Europa League. But Rodgers couldn't do anything beyond the last 32, like the games against Zenit. Second leg was a disaster. Valencia was just, I think, really disappointing, if I remember correctly. That was just about a few weeks before he left. So there's that kind of balance right now for Postecoglou. You can tell he's building something in a different way. There's, of course, there's loyalty to his players, but he's looking at it in a different, in the way the teams that Celtic would like to compete against, I think we've touched on before, like a Salzburg, or teams that are very proactive in terms of recruitment, transfers, thinking ahead of other teams. You think, oh, they've lost three of their best players, but suddenly, I think someone like Awata would come under that. And I don't know about you, but to me, I would be amazed if he's not a regular starter within the next year. And I know Moy and Riley have been important players, but I think he just looks top class. Like, I think he's going to be a really, really good player. For all accounts, at Lennox Town, he is turning heads. That's the thing. That's why he's getting his 20 minutes here and there. I think he's got a bit of everything in Awata, where he can close down quickly, win a tackle. And I think he is a number six. I think that's what's going to make it so interesting. Like, Cal McGregor probably is going to split roles. He'll probably play some games as the deepest player, some one up maybe in that Moy role. Mm-hmm. Next to Moy, right? Celtic are unbelievably deep midfield. You don't get a guy like David Turnbull. But to return you back to your original, of course he's a legend. If he left at the end of the season, I think his 2 years would be fondly remembered. And obviously, if you go in for 3 years, 4 years, etc., then that would only add to that. But he's a massive part. I think the way he was able to readdress the balance so quickly after the season of nightmares for Celtic as well, I think that alone is enough to kind of warrant kind of legendary status moving forward.
And I know, Mick, is again another impossible question, but why not? It would be great to see another 100 games under Ange, but the way that football is, inevitably in the summer, he's going to have offers, isn't he? And it's just, I mean, do you think he'll stay? I mean, I realise there's no way you can answer that, but...
Well, is he? I'm starting to wonder a wee bit. I mean, we're obviously in the bubble in Scotland and all that stuff. I mean, we don't know how English football, that's what we're talking about here, English football probably, how it views us. I mean, there's now been three or four jobs that have came and gone in England that hasn't really been a strong approach for him. Maybe tentative feelers put out and all that stuff. So what job is going to come up that's going to entice him? Mm-hmm. That's interesting to me, because listen, he knows he's in a good job. You can tell he enjoys the challenge. He's completely. I mean, last night, I mean, the fans last night were serenading him at the end with big banners and all that stuff. Somebody will ask the question at some point, but it depends on where that question comes from. I mean, we've talked this season about Southampton bottom of the league in England. Maybe that was a cup at one point that came up. Leeds relegation zone, that came up. Everton relegation zone. There was other mentions earlier on. I think maybe Palace mentioned at some point. I don't know. So you're looking at teams struggling at the bottom of the Premier League. The Ange Postecoglou style isn't going to be a firefighting kind of Sean Dyche battling to stay a drop. They might like to have that kind of manager, but it's not a time to bring it in when you're fighting fires at the bottom of the league.
No.
Then you think, well, top end team in the championship, a team to get the championship, there might be a call from that kind of area. But would they want that? I don't know. I mean, he's obviously takes a lot of pride in a Champions League manager now from Australia as well. So it'd be interesting. I don't think Celtic fans would be too worried about him jumping ship that soon. Which is probably famous last words, because some challenge might come up that he fancies.
No.
I just sense a kind of change in tone in his language in recent weeks. And obviously, it was a wee bit cute when he came to talk about Leeds and all that stuff. And it was a wee bit, I wouldn't say evasive, but he was keeping his cards close to his chest and he was playing it cute. But then, and obviously, after the cup final, he's very emphatic on what he wants to be here, and he's not thinking about leaving and all that stuff. And I'm thinking, that's obviously because of his so comfortable surroundings and he's enjoying it and he's winning trophies. he's adulation of the crowds. But it also might be that the fact that maybe three or four jobs that have come round that he probably should have been getting phone calls for, he wasn't getting phone calls for. And you think, well, why is that? That's a bit strange. But listen, he's in a good position, so he's not particularly fussed about it. So it'll be interesting. I mean, as a Tottenham or a Chelsea or these kind of teams going to come and look at him, I don't know. When you look at the managers they kind of tend to go for, it doesn't seem to fit that kind of bill, because they're wanting somebody who's got a Champions League winning medal. Winner's medal is not in the locker, really.
No.
So I don't know if that's what they're... I wouldn't expect those kind of calls to come, even though they probably would think they should. That's because we see it on a weekly basis. So it leaves them a kind of weird... Listen, we've seen it before at Celtic. I mean, Neil Lennon did a tremendous job at Celtic. Decided I need a break. And the phone never rang. He ended up in Bolton, which was a complete basket case of a club at the time. So that was a strange one. Brendan Rodgers gets a job in the Premier League in England at Leicester. Not one of the... I mean, obviously, they won the league, obviously, that kind of that season. They had an amazing season. But the phone calls weren't coming from the right top end of that division either. And he got that job pretty much in the back of what he'd done in England before.
Mm-hmm.
So he's kind of caught in a wee bit of a kind of limbo at the moment. And we don't really know, because English football, again... Like, as I say, unless he has a really good European campaign next season, that would really force teams to take notice. But that's down the lines. I mean, that's a good bit down the line. So I wouldn't be surprised if he'd done another 100 games at Celtic. I know everyone seems to think that he's a matter of time before he goes. I don't quite subscribe to that at this point in time.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's been a shift in my view, and maybe his own as well.
It could be, as you say, Mick, famous last words, but I definitely fall in a camp where Graham, I don't see him leaving Celtic for a Crystal Palace or a Bournemouth or a even a Leeds down at the bottom of the Premier League. I could be completely wrong, but I just don't see him leaving to go and do that.
I think it's a bad... Maybe probably can't pigeonhole every club near the bottom. They're not all judged. Certain clubs might have certain appeals that maybe as well. You need to remember, I think this is important as well, the fact that his journey as well, if you're talking about patience, like he's in his late 50s and he's got to this point, and I know there's been success along the way managing a studio, that's it as well. Like when you look back, some of the kind of, we're talking about others that maybe like are kind of playing them down, managing your team at a World Cup,
mm-hmm.
Asia Cup, winning a title in Japan, like it's not to be sniffed at when you look at it, and then you see what he's able to do when he comes to Scotland. I think there's definitely a balance between I think if he does leave Celtic, probably looking at kind of final job, potentially, you know, that big job, maybe return back home at some point. So that would be in his mindset. But I think is the line as well, Mick's right. I think he's always been quite guarded and rightfully so. Why get in and cornered in? But the line about, I think he might be surprised how long I'm here, I think that's music to Celtic fans' ears. And I think Europe's a big thing. If the title race is really competitive next year, Rangers have gone up a level, or maybe even Celtic have a tricky start, say that adds an extra intrigue to the title. But it's purely Europe, like in the sense that's what he wants. It's not even about this idea about judging Celtic. Obviously Celtic have been wanting to make progress in Europe, but I think for Ange, just want to test himself, his second team, his third team, the sense that an evolved Celtic team under his watch. I think that's his greatest strength, because the one thing really does need note, Brendan Rodgers' first season, Vincible Treble, that team was up there with any Celtic team you'll ever see. Mm-hmm. But they never get better. They never improved that. So much of that second season, the home league games were a cure for insomnia. It was really, really bad. And I think because Rodgers had built up such credit, you kind of forgive that, but some absolute stinkers. They actually, the third season, hit and miss again up until he left. Domestically, more than eight. I think it's got to be said, like the first season was perfect football, like you can't get any better. I think Ange is a rare, he's improved. They were good last year, they're better this year. You wouldn't rule him out doing that again. I think that honestly is based on the way he conducts his transfer business. There's just a light touch and they're able to move players in, get the right players in. And I think that's where it is yielding results for Celtic. And I think on the basis of that, I think there can be real success next year in Europe. And I think that's what everything's about. You can't just go down to six Champions League games, but there's got to be a moment. You know these teams like Bruges this season, winning the group. Obviously, the manager left. There's got to be that moment. I think Celtic under Postecoglou are a team capable of something, whether it be a marquee victory away at a team they probably shouldn't beat, or a really solid points total in the Champions League without make. But again, we know that's so difficult. Bruges were the one off as a four seed, but Celtic under this guy's leadership are capable of something. And I think that's what will drive him as much as any offers elsewhere. But as Mick says, you never know the offer, you never know how it'll work out. But I think he's got a real bit between his teeth to try and do what he probably always wanted to do, take a team like Celtic, a European pedigree, bring them back to kind of that moment. And then who knows, even if they land a few blows in the Champions League, this team's capable in the Europa League knockout, I think, of being the team we're watching now, solid at the back, plenty of good attacking players. They'll have their moment. I think they're miles ahead of the team that played Bodo Glimt 12 months ago. So and I think that's what will drive them.
I know it's not how football works as well, Mick, but you must look at that Rangers team that got to the Europa League final and think, better than them. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think Graham's right. There's definitely something to be achieved in Europe.
Oh, without a doubt. And that's his challenge. That is the next challenge. It kind of has to do something in Europe, really. Because that's the demands at the club. And that, I think getting to Champions League group stages and I think finishing third in the group stages would be a success. And I think getting into the knockout stages in the Europa League after Christmas, and they need a knockout win at some point, I think that would be classed as success. But that's always been the kind of the benchmark for success. It's not always easy. They certainly haven't won a knockout tie for about 20 years in Europe. So that's the next challenge. But he knows that. I think he knows that as well. But I think there is too many live issues still to deal with on the home front before he gets to that. But that is the next challenge. Is getting to staying in Europe beyond Christmas, and either if they can get a second place finish the Champions League, that would be exceptional. That would be way above expectation, I think, in the current climate, the way the game has moved on. But listen, these are targets that I think he'll have in his mind. Maybe not this present time now, because there's so much going on to the end of the season, but it very soon we'll come into focus and that will be the target. But as I agree with Youngie, it is achievable for Celtic. It should be achievable. When you look at teams like Bruges and Bodo and all and doing quite well in Europe, there's no reason why in Rangers as well. I think that's also worth bearing in mind that Postecoglou in Scotland, we've got a terrible habit in Scotland. If one team's up, and it's been talking about the Glasgow rivalry, if one team's good, the other one's hopeless. Mm-hmm. That's how we judge it. And by the way, a lot of the times that was the case. I mean, in the last 10 years, Celtic, I mean, when Brendan Rodgers was talking about Brendan Rodgers and this, and I think he did a great job, Rodgers, but Rangers were fairly hopeless at that point in time. I mean, struggling to finish even second in the league and all that stuff. They weren't particularly clever. Whereas Celtic now, in the last two seasons, I mean, Postecoglou came out a team that was 25 points behind the year before in the league. And this team also got to the European final. Rangers are no mugs, and they're still not any mugs. I mean, Rangers would be top of the league now in every other season, apart from this season. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're 9 points behind Celtic, but this would have been enough points now to be top of the league most seasons. I think go back and check it. When we touched on Rodgers' second season, finished with 82 points. Postecoglou's at 79 points already. He's only 3 points off the second season total that won the league for Rodgers. So he's going toe-to-toe with a very good Rangers team. I know Rangers fans are a bit kind of grumpy just now and they're not happy because they're their second best to Celtic. But at some point, they have to acknowledge that it's just because Celtic have been so good. It's finding it hard to keep up. And listen, they have been doing their best to keep up since they changed their manager, but they're suffering because Celtic have been so good. I mean, at the moment, they're on track to get over 100 points. It's only happened once in 23 years. When Neil managed it back in 2002 and Rodgers managed it in his first season. But even hitting 90 points only happened half time. The 9 in a row only happened 4 times out of 9. It's happened 5 out of the last 10 title wins. That's not that common to hit 100 points. And that's where he's heading for just now. And you could have Celtic and Rangers both hitting 100 points this season. And Rangers could end up the season with 100 points and lose the league, which is absolutely terrifying, really. Think about it. Which maybe says something about the standard of the league as well, as I touched on earlier on. But you can't fault the way it's going at Celtic, that's for sure.
I would put it to you, Graham, that although Rangers, Mick's quite right, Rangers have kept up their end of the bargain in the league, but I think Hearts on Saturday at Tynecastle is now Celtic's biggest obstacle to winning the treble?
Probably. I think they need to play Rangers again at Hampden. That's a tough game, especially with the fact. But I know exactly what you mean. Hearts have almost teed up by playing them this week. Tynecastle, probably that game earlier on the season, it was bonkers. It was brilliant, the 4-3 game. Everything's kind of set up. And I think, as we know with Hearts, they're at their best when they go for it. Sometimes it was almost like they were treading water on some of those group stage games this season in the Conference League, and it didn't work for them. So they won't be playing like that. They'll obviously be on the front foot, which should make for a cracking game. It will be tough. Like, I just think the fullbacks with Taylor and Johnson coming back in, I thought Nelson had a tough, like, kind of tough first half, but some of his passing as well, like his crossing maybe not as good as it usually. You know, he gets the byline, he likes that pitching wedge cross. A few of them were a wee bit high last night, but some of those reverse passes were still pretty good. But I think Johnson comes back in, he's got a real steal as well. Taylor as well, I think, seems a goer to come back for Saturday. I think that's a big difference. I think that's where Celtic will win it, because they go both ways, don't they? Tynecastle, it's a bit tighter. They come inside, but there's also more space that they play their fullbacks a bit wider in these games. Sometimes in the away games where they're able to kind of, they'll still dominate the ball, but play maybe a wee bit more traditional kind of 4-3-3 in games like this. So the chances are both to get down the byline, and I think that might be key. Midfield as well, Atati's obviously got to come back in, but wonder how you kind of balance the rest. But these are the kind of decisions that Andrew will be relishing to make. His big games are what this team's all about. So it's a significant game. Significant. I think the Nielsen's comments about a panel, maybe not panel fun before it as well, add to it. So we'll see how it all plays out. But it's going to be an absolute cracker. Really, really exciting game. I think everyone that likes Scottish football should be looking forward to it. It'll be top notch stuff.
You'd imagine, Mick, if they're all fit, like Graham says, Hatate, Taylor, and Johnston all probably come back in.
Yeah, I think so. You've seen in the last few weeks that Postecoglou is kind of settling on. He's kind of, for the first time in 18 months or so, he's kind of settling on a kind of preferred starting 11. Maeda's the one, I think Maeda might be really struggling. So then do you go to Abada? You touched on Haksabanovic. I think he's worth a run the team now as well. I think he's ready to go. He's been really lively coming off the bench. He's been one of the guys that's helped turn the game. See, the game is when they tend to get goals early, then they kind of be a week in an easy period, then they go out again late on. He's been the driving force between these kind of late bursts. Done it again the other night. I think he's the one that might be worth a run, especially it'll be tighter at Tynecastle. He can work on outside and inside. He can take the ball in tight spaces. Maeda wouldn't get the space to run in behind like he did the other night as well. So I think that'd be one I'm looking at as well. I thought Jota actually played really well. I thought he was pretty, for his standards, I thought he was maybe a wee bit off it. It's a man last weekend. But he was back on it again against Hearts on Wednesday. So there's only one or two wee decisions to make here and there. But I think Haksabanovic is worth a bash. And Jota in the tight areas at Tynecastle, I think he'd be important as well. Mm-hmm. But the good thing about Celtic is they can change things in game as well if it's not quite working. I mean, I've been quite impressed with O. Anytime he's appeared as well, he's been a real thorn in the side of defenders. I think he's a good option to bring on as well if need be. So they've got plenty of options. I think Hearts are, I mean, you're saying that Hearts are the biggest obstacle on the table. I still think there's a bit to go in terms of the league and cup. I think the league's pretty much there. So is it 7 wins to need out of 10? Mm-hmm. 5 home games in there as well, I think. So, yeah, you think that's one hand in the title type situation there. But the cup, no, they're still, I mean, you think Rangers should get by their tie at the weekend, so they've been the last 4. So you'd fancy another collision course with Rangers at some point. And as I said, they're a good side, Rangers, no matter, I know punters think that they're hopeless because they're not in top, but that would be a real difficult test as well. So, but this one is the hardest tie they could have got outside going to Ibrox. And Hearts showed enough the other night to suggest that they will be in the fight at the weekend. And Celtic need to be at their very best. So it has its other makings of a cracker, that's for sure.
One thing's for sure, it definitely won't be boring.
Well, I wasn't going to be until you said that. Now it's going to be, now it's going to be nothing each. No shots on target. No VAR incidents. Nothing at all.
I apologise in advance to everyone listening. I think that more or less brings us to the end of today's podcast, guys. Mick, Graham, it's always a pleasure. Thanks very much for joining me. I should say, for everyone listening, you can find us obviously on Facebook and on Twitter at record_sport and on Instagram at dailyrecord_sport. Guys, thanks again.
No worries, all the best, chaps, everyone.
And thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.